Hi, this is David Frangioni, CEO and publisher of Modern Drummer Magazine. So excited about our new podcast, the Modern Drummer Podcast. This weekly podcast will bring Modern Drummer to life. Sit back and enjoy fresh, fun, and insightful conversations with today's top drummers, producers, musicians, beat makers, and craftsmen. Whether you're a professional, a hobbyist, drummer, musician, programmer, producer, or just love music, this show is for you. Every other week, the Modern Drummer Podcast will feature world-renowned producer, songwriter, and drummer, Narda Michael Walden. Narda Michael Walden's Upbeat is featured exclusively on the Modern Drummer Podcast.
Hey, this is your brother, Narda Michael Walden, for the Upbeat Show with Modern Drummer Magazine, and I'm very, very, very thrilled, enthused for this week's episode with the genius on the drums and what he's put down for the years and what he's showed us and inspired us. The great, 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 I'm speaking of the no other than the great legend, Steve Gadd. And to have him on this show with me Upbeat is my delight and my thrill. So please pay strict attention to every word he puts down. And so loyal and so sincere and so pure of spirit. You can see why his playing is just so stellar through the years. God bless the great Steve Gadd and pay attention to his wonderful, wonderful interview here. Okay, here you go. Here's the great Steve Gadd with Narda. Woohoo! My brother Steve.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you.
Oh, great to see you, Steve.
Good to see that smiling face always. I love that, man. That hat, too.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Hey, I want to do something for you because I love you. Hang on, check this out. Okay. Let's see. Beautiful. It's beautiful, Steve. The closer I get to you. The more you make me feel, by giving me all you got, your love has captured me, still, over and over again, I try to tell myself that we're much more than friends, and I know it's because the rhythm in your heart touches us so deeply. Yes, it does. I love you, Steve, man. The way you play your drums is so soulful. I come from an R&B school from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and the way you play just makes me know that everything is right in the world, man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, there's nothing like the groove, man. It surpasses everything, right? When you lock in, man, all the craziness goes away and there's nothing but joy and love, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I want to talk to you about today. This is why I'm waiting to talk to you. And the whole world wants me to talk to you.
Oh.
Because we look to you as a groove master. We look to you as the cat who could just make time feel good. You make time feel good, man. And I want to ask you anything you want to say about that.
When we lock it in, it feels good for me too.
right.
It's got to feel good here first, and then it can go out. So when we lock it in, you know, it makes life easier. Mm-hmm. We don't need as much sleep. Mm-hmm. I think we can add years on our life because you get that thing, you get it where it's flowing and it's effortless, and there's an agreement with the people that you're playing with, and we're all feeling the same thing at the same time. And then when that's happening on the bandstand, and then we can look out and see that the people are feeling as good as we are, that's the thing, man. Then it's all, you know, then we've come full circle and we're all in it together. You know what I mean? It's yeah. like, and that's a spiritual moment.
Yes, very much so, man.
You know, it gets beyond the ego. It's only into making it feel as as good as you can, and sharing that with people that are there, the same feeling. You know what I mean? And yes. And then being there together.
Yes. Well, okay. This is why I'm gonna ask you just the things that off my heart to you.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who get into being very technical on the instrument, but maybe don't understand that side of it as much as the feeling you're talking about, the spiritual side of that feeling of a groove. And I know you talk about this a lot. I see it in your quotes, you know, if it ain't got that groove, it don't mean shit, you'll say. You know what I mean? You're so strong about it. What made you understand that so deeply? I mean, as a kid coming up, can I ask you that?
Well, I mean, I don't know what made, well, I'm just from the people that I listened to growing up.
Yeah.
Plus I played in drum and bugle corps when I was a kid.
Right.
And that is, there was something I learned in that it gets beyond the ego. It's about teamwork.
Yes.
And when the drum section can, it's not about trying to draw attention to any one person. It's about making the sections as tight and as execute everything as perfectly as you can.
Yes.
And so that helped me listen to other people and made me know that the importance is in the agreement of the people, not just one person trying to get people to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
And there's a camaraderie that comes with that. So there was a lot of things that when that feeling got locked in, there were a lot of good feelings that came as a result of it. The strength of the team, yes. The bond between the guys in the section, and I just sort of like took that to other genres of music, you know. And for me, even when stuff is out, there's a point, there's a time, I think there's a time point of reference that makes taking it out successful. When you think about that thing, because you can play around with the time, but you always have to, for me, I always have to know where one is, no matter how crazy you get, or else it doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
Because the only way that you're going to be able to share that with the audience is if we're all in the same place, and if they know where, you know, I don't want to leave them and know where one is and have them not know where it is. The joy is when we can sort of stretch. But we all know where one is together, you know?
That's right. That's right.
And that's how we grow rhythmically. And the agreement is always strongest, you know, when you get everybody up there agreeing instead of just feeling like you're up there alone trying to make
right.
it.
Right. Okay. You learned a lot by all the recordings you did. You learned a lot by hearing yourself on the playbacks. And you learned, like, you know, to give notes full value. And that's what we learned to love about you. When we hear you back, you give notes full value. That's why it sounds and feels so good. Anything you want to say about that?
It's still one of the challenges always is to be able to play one
mm-hmm.
on the bass drum and lock it in with the bass player.
Right.
You know what I mean? And not play, you know, and not a lot of notes to set it up. Just like, let's just play one together and then mm-hmm. agree on that. And then we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that, you know, we can't run before we can walk, you know, mm-hmm. and I just think that understanding time and rhythm in terms of simple music or complicated music, it's like, it's, there are some things that we have to take into consideration all the time. That's like knowing where one is.
Yes.
I know that you like to know.
I always want to know. Yeah. I have to know.
Exactly. I remember we were in the club, man, and I agree, you know. That's not to say that guys aren't playing a whole bunch of great stuff in other ways, you know what I mean? But for me, and for the years that I've played, you know, the things that are important are that we all know where we, I want you to know where I'm at, you know what I mean?
That's right.
And I want you to know that I know where you're at and that I'm trying to play with you, you know what I mean? Yes. So we have to do that together.
Yes. Okay. I'm being my drummer guy right now. Drummers in the world also love that you can play with so much fire intensity, but with the control you have. Now this is your discipline that we love about you. You can play about whatever it is, but it just feels like it's not rushing, which we all have a tendency to rush a bit. You learn how to do all these things on the biggest records in the world and make it feel relaxed.
Well, because I learned, you know, what I had to work on in myself. I have the same problems of rushing. You know what I mean? We all do when we get excited, when we go from, you know, A to B, and it's got to, the section B has got to be up a little bit. We can get excited trying to set it up. And so from after doing that for on different records and having the opportunity to hear it back,
mm-hmm.
You know, you realize the importance of it. I mean, I remember doing takes, you know, early on in my recording career, and where I thought that, you know, I figured, man, I played some great stuff. It was exciting. It was, you know, like, and I heard it back and it's just sounded like I fell down the stairs. You know what I mean? It's like it had what I thought was exciting, you know, on a recording wasn't. It was just too much. You know what I mean? And so you get a chance by listening back to, you know, sort of do an inventory on what you're using on that particular song. You know, it might work, the busyness and stuff might work live.
Yeah.
But on a recording where you're just using your ears, you know, it's simpler is better.
Yeah.
And that's another challenge because I came from a jazz background.
Right.
You know, where I loved, Buddy Rich and Gene Krupa and Art Blakey and Elvin Jones and Tony. I approached every time I played like it was going to be the last time I ever played, you know. I wanted to get all my licks in when I was young and I first got to New York. And then when I got to New York, I mean, the groove became, I heard some, you know, Rick Murata, right?
Yes, of course.
So Rick, he's got a deep pocket and so does his brother Jerry.
Yeah.
And I heard Rick playing at a club in the early 70s with David Spinoza.
Right.
And Stu Woods was playing bass and Kenny Asher was playing keyboards. And there were a lot of New York musicians in the club and they were playing real. I mean, this had nothing to do with jazz. This was just about, you know, down.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, people like me would have thought was simple because technically it really isn't challenging technically at all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when you sit down and try to do that, it is challenging.
Right.
I mean, it's very challenging. It involves your breathing. It involves just like knowing that it might feel good, but when you listen to it back, it's on top of the thing.
Right.
So it's like rethinking everything you do.
Right.
And I got challenged, thank God, by the groove.
Mm-hmm.
Because just because it sounds simple technically, there's a lot more to it than, you know, just, I mean, trying to play one on the bass drum with the bass player, that's something that you have to think about all the time. You can never forget about that.
Right.
And right. to try and play time without filling in all the connecting notes between quarter notes, you know what I mean? Just by playing, you know, a quarter note backbeat, bass drum, you know, just those, that's hard to do, man. And yes. When you try and do it with another person and lock it in with a click.
Yes.
And that's a whole other world of time. You know?
I know, but this is also what we love about you, Steve. I'm gonna give it to you, man. Because you make everything, I'm going to tell you, you do. It's you've mastered it to where it feels good to us. And the thing I played this morning, the closer I feel to you, with the great genius Donny Hathaway, the great genius Roberta Flack, the way you make that thing feel is timeless. Now, can you tell us anything about that session for in particular?
With, they're all the sessions are. I mean, especially with people like Roberta and Donnie. I mean, those were, they were heroes of mine before I even, I was so thrilled to just get called to do the session. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the fact that I got called was really important. And what I wanted to do was make the music the best I could because I love music and because I love those people, and I would really, I'd love for them to call me back to want me to do more. Yes. You know, you want to give as much as you can, and then the gift of giving is when they receive it and like it, mm-hmm. man. Mm-hmm. And then if they call you back, mm-hmm. wow. I mean, those are special. That's a special thing, right?
That's a very special thing.
I mean, that's how we build our business.
That's right.
It's like a mom and dad story. You want people to come back.
That's right.
You want them to come back. You want your service to be, you want them to feel that you've given them everything that you can. You've made them as comfortable. You've anything they wanted to try, you tried. You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. that's the gig.
But then, okay, something you said a minute ago, you were challenged by the groove that your cat Murata was putting down. Challenged by the group is a powerful statement. On the jam we're talking about, by Donnie and Roberta, that groove, challenged by the groove, you're in that groove. I mean, it's just beautiful the whole way. And the album is Blue Light in the Basement. It's just so deep. So that groove you're talking about, there it is again, man. I have to keep saying that to you. But then dig it, you're so versatile because of your training. You flip around, you can do the Night Sprites with Chakria, which is on fire. Now, can we talk about it?
Yeah, because the thing is, like, I think there's musicians that come from a technical background that if they were playing something simple, they might be thinking about, I wish I was doing this other thing.
right, okay.
You know, I'm not getting a chance to, you know, play all my Night Sprite stuff, but the bottom line is they're separate things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that this is music. This is a certain kind of music here. That's a certain kind of music there. And I love them both.
Yes.
You don't try to combine, you know, you don't try to, you know, bring this there if it's not musical, just right. because it's technically thrilling. You know right. what I mean? It's like, right. it's about the music. It's not about the ego.
Right. A question I'd like to know for myself. In your phones, when you're tracking, what do you like to hear in your phones?
I like to hear the click, if we're playing with a click. I want to hear the bass player. I want to hear if there's rhythm guitar. I don't want to hear myself.
Okay.
I use the Vic Firth phones that black out the drums in the room so I can play comfortably.
Yeah.
And not be louder than what I'm playing with. I what I'm trying to play with has got to be louder than me.
Gotcha.
And so, and I, you know, what I want in the phones, you know, it changes depending on the piece, but it might be depending if there's a rhythm part on the keyboard. I want to be able to lock in with people that are playing the rhythm things, that are playing the repetitive things, you know what I mean? Because that's how we base where one is and try to make it, you know, lock it in. Yeah. I don't need a lot of the pads. I don't need a lot of the embellishments. Mm-hmm. People would want to hear on the finished product. I need to hear what I need to lock in the groove.
That's right.
So, not a lot of effects. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely want to hear the bass. I want to hear the melody so I know where we are in the song. But it, you know, it varies for each recording, you know?
Yes.
What about you? Is that, are you like that too?
I'm like that. Well, I might want to hear a little bit more of myself than you're talking, because I want to make sure that I can hear myself as well. Right. But beyond that, yes, I'm digging you. The click, of course, everything. That, because we came up in a time when people were making records with clicks and wanted things to be steady like them clicks. So we had to make sure we're hearing that click, so we're not rushing that click. Right. So that was a big to-do for us. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I want to hear it. I want to hear what's going on. I want to ask now, in my heart, this things I'm curious for you. When you work in a challenging situation, for example, like Paul Simon can be challenging. I worked with him a little bit at Carnegie Hall, and he's a challenging type of guy. He came and told every person, no, you play this shaker this way. No, you do that this way. You know, he's really into it. How did you find working with him? And here you did some of the most mastery recordings with him of, you know, Crazy After These Years and all this stuff. Talk about him a little bit and your experience working with him.
He's a great writer, he's a great producer.
Yes.
I learned that you don't, with Paul, you don't just, you know, reach into your bag of tricks and pull something out. Mm-hmm. He's constantly looking for something different, a different sound, you know. So, that can be challenging at first because it can affect your head if you're trying things that you normally do. And he's not going, yeah, that's good. But he's going, well, yeah, I'm not sure. Let's try something else. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you have to get over this getting into your own head and getting down on yourself and feeling like he doesn't like what I'm doing. You know, it's all of those egotistical things that can play tricks on you.
Yes.
You know, make it be just about the music and be challenged by the fact that someone that doesn't know really how to play drums is hearing something from the drums that he's trying to put into words. But it's, you know, it's difficult to verbalize about music. So you just try different things. And finally, you know, when you do come up with something, it's something that you really wouldn't have thought of normally. Paul, because he kept on wanting something different, brought out of you. And you know, and I found some thing, you know, I learned how to, he taught me how to play music in a different way. You know what I mean? Where I wasn't just thinking myself as a drummer, but more or less trying to fit in different sounds now, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it was a learning situation for me.
Yeah.
We have to get past our own ego, mm-hmm, and thinking that, you know, he doesn't like what I'm doing, or he's putting me through some changes, and what, you know what I mean? It's like, we all do that in our heads. We can get in our heads and defeat ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, and before we've even got to the music, it's not about the ego. It's just about people have different ways of trying to get to what they want to hear in their music. And our job is to try and help them get there. And one of the ways is sometimes you got to play everything that it isn't before. And sometimes a drummer might know, what it should be. But sometimes you got to go through everything that it isn't and come back to that, so the artist can understand that it isn't all of this stuff, that it is that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
People that are motivated by their music, and their music is important to them, they want it to be the best that it can be, you know. Mm-hmm. and that's a long road, but it's worth it. Do you know what I mean? It's worth it when you finally get there. And it can, you know, it can mean like you're only playing on the snare drum with the snares off with your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the sound that works for the piece, mm-hmm. but it got nothing to do with whatever I practiced in college for years. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a whole other thing, but you know what? It's just as rewarding. Yeah. You know, when it's right for the music, not only do you hear it, but then the joy that everyone else feels and the sense that it makes for everyone that's trying to do that with their part for that particular music. You know, there's one more piece of the puzzle that you fit in. Yeah. And it's just another way of recording. It's another process. Yeah. All artists have different processes of getting to where they want to get to.
Yes.
And each session is like a new thing. It's like a new canvas.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go in there thinking, I wish I could do today what I did yesterday. This is a whole different thing, man. This is like, and it's, you know, you go in with a clean thing, with a fresh head, and then trying to just dig in, roll up your sleeves, and do what you have to do to make the music the best that it can be.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay, challenging session. At least this was my perception in working with, say, Steely Dan, Asia. We always hear about Jeff Porcaro or this or that trying to cut a lot of stuff for them. They were very picky, let's say, or very choosy about what they wanted. What was your experience, say, working with them on Asia, which you did genius? Quite frankly, that one piece alone. And you hit the stick hit on the rim. And they kept it. You know what I'm saying? Hey, man, talk to me.
Well, they had been trying to do this piece, you know, I think with different drummers. And I was in L.A., you know, doing some work out there. I was from New York, and Gary Katz heard that I was out there and hired me to come in and play this thing. So the music was all there, and the band had played it with different people. And my reading was good at the time, because I mean, it was like in the height of the stuff, you know, and I was doing a lot of reading, you know, in different sessions. And the hardest thing to understand that it was for me to understand that they wanted me to do was to get that crazy at the end, because it went against the grain of what I had learned to try and do, you know, for pop sessions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That was more like jazz stuff, and you never really, you know, so that was, I couldn't understand how, but I just got crazy. You know what I mean? I just, and that's what they liked.
Yeah.
I think that was the problem with the other people. They just didn't understand about that. They wanted it to get nuts, you know?
Right. Okay.
You know, and so that's what I did, and it worked out. But I've done other sessions with them where we spent an hour just trying to, or not an hour, a long time, just trying to record me playing the snare drum in the same spot. You know what I mean? And just the snare drum by itself. So it went from playing Asia live with a band,
right,
and getting through it in a couple of takes to, like, you know, now we're going to put everything under the microscope and it's just me in the studio. Or whoever they hired to do, you know, they hired a lot of different people, but it went from playing live to just playing alone by yourself, and they could control everything after you left. So different techniques in recording, you know,
but, yeah.
you can't argue with the success of their music is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
You absolutely. Got a thing.
Yes. Yes, man.
It's okay. It's not always easy to get there, though.
Right. I know. That's why we love you, because you find a way not only to get there, but it sounds, when we hear it, with ease. It sounds like, hey, what's going on? Hey.
That's what I try to make it feel like, you know?
Okay, New York. I've lived in New York. When I was there, you were all the rage. Everyone had to talk. Steve Gass again. Talk about, from your experience, New York, Hiram Bullock, Will Lee, all the folks, McKells, all that was going on so strong, and how that changed you, moved you, inspired you.
You know, because when I got to New York, there were so many great players there.
Yeah.
You know, and not only there were great players and, you know, jazz players that weren't doing a lot of studio things, but you could go hear them. Mm-hmm. And then the guys in that were doing dates were really, like Richard T.
Right, exactly.
Gordon Edwards, Cornell Dupree, Eric Gale, Will Lee. These were guys, the Brecker brothers.
Right.
I mean, unbelievable musicians that with so much music in them. And I was, I was there in the early 70s when guys like the Brecker brothers were challenged, but they loved the groove stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, Michael trying to sound like Train, or, you know what I mean? But I mean, he could do that, but he loved some other stuff too. He loved the groove. Mm-hmm. And I did too. So it was a good time for me. Mm-hmm. And I was hungry, you know, and I was excited about meeting new people, and about being in a city that was had a community of players that were, you know, doing a lot of different sessions, and you'd end up seeing some of the same ones on different sessions that you got, and then one would tell another guy about you, and it was like an exciting time, because you want to play, you know. I wanted to play. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be, I had two kids and a wife at the time. I wanted to be able to support them playing music. And it was happening, you know, and it was exciting. And all I did was do the best I could, try to understand what these people wanted. Mm-hmm. And anything I knew musically, I would share with them. I would give whatever I had. Mm-hmm. I wasn't saving anything for anything else.
Right.
Whatever was needed for any particular session, if I came up with it, you know, I was happy to share that, and help put the puzzle together.
I remember I was teaching at the. There's a place in New York, it was like a drummer's collective type of situation where we would teach the students, and you came by and you played so beautifully, and you were just so giving to the kids and everybody. There was a kid there, he was 13 at the time, named Charlie Drayton. He would be 13 years old, and you came and you played for all of us, and then Charlie got up and played. He was 13. And I remember just the kindness that we all kind of felt, you know, the camaraderie, just a wonderful thing. That's what touched me when I first met you, I think, around that same time.
Right. Well, Charlie was, I've known Charlie since he was even younger than me.
Even younger. Okay.
His father, Bernie.
Yeah, right.
Was a jingle producer for Herman Edel, HEA. Right. And Bernie would bring Charlie to these jingles. And Charlie was a little guy, man. Right. It's still with that big smile and that big personality, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When he was a kid.
Yeah.
And he would come and sit next to the drums during these sessions and take it all in, man. He was like, you know, so I knew him. I had already met him before that day, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, he was great, man. He was great. What a way to grow up, too.
What a way, man. What a way.
And Jeff, too. Jeff Porcaro grew up in a good environment. with his dad, you know, and playing percussion, you know, and he knew Keltner. He grew up with Keltner. I mean, he was, you know, hung out with the best, man. Just they were around him as he was growing, man. So
I also want to say I remember hanging out with you in Europe at some jazz festival that you played on. I was on, I don't want to say Antibes, France or somewhere like that. And we had a chance to hang out. And I was just so taken by how friendly you are. You know, we all often don't know a person like yourself who plays so beautifully, so high. We're not sure as a person, but you're really a genuine, warm, really warm person. I was like just taken by how warm you are, you know?
You're the same way, man. You're the same way, man. And I love that about you.
Thank you. And then we toured again with you playing with Eric. I played with Jeff. That was a nice time together.
It's all good, man. And yeah. We hung out in the club, whenever we've hung, man.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Thank you.
And so then I look forward to being able to do more. And it'd be great to even do some things musically together.
Yes, sir. Anything. I would love to work with you, man. I have a great studio, by the way. Come out and visit me in Santa Fe, California, Tarpan Studios. We'll get a great drum sound and whatever you want to do.
I'll come out just to hang with you, man, and see what you're doing and watch. I'd like to do it. You know what I mean?
You ain't coming out here not playing, bro. Get over it. Get over it, man.
We'll play together, man.
Okay, cool.
But I like to watch people because you learn. Yeah. You can learn. Watch how people are doing things and might be a little bit different from someone else, but everything, you know, little things make a difference.
Well, in my spirit, I got to share something with you. Mahavishnu, who discovered me, kind of picked me and brought me up, he would teach me, he would say, you know, with time, he would say, which horse is stronger? The horse that can run down the mountain the fastest, or the horse that can run and stop periodically coming down the mountain? And I would say, well, I guess the horse that can stop coming down the mountain. He would say, right, you know, the power of, you know, being able to control yourself, you know. And I would think, you have found the power to control yourself.
Well, that's it. Got to control you. That's the thing, man. But you know, age can bring it. It can make that power come good too.
Okay.
Because you get older, you don't want to do things as fast as you used to. You know, it's nice to be able to. I mean, I'm glad I did all that high energy stuff when I was young and I did it. But you know, I'm not as challenged by that now. I think because of my age.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Not because the music isn't great and stuff, but I mean, it's like, yeah, I like to relax and, you know, and put it in the pocket, mm-hmm. and then be inspired by the groove to play, you know, and then the magic happens, you know.
Well, let's speak a little bit about your band now. I know we've been going through this pandemic, so everything kind of got slow, but talk, you won a Grammy 2018 with this new sound you got and anything you want to say?
Well, that Grammy, the band that we put together was actually my wife's idea with Walt Fowler. His wife is Michelle Ito. She books the band. Okay. And they were thinking, it was James Taylor's rhythm section. It was Jimmy Johnson, me, Larry Goldings, Walt Fowler was in the horn section, and Mike Landau.
Right.
And they said, you guys are playing together so much with James. Why don't you do, you know, Steve, why don't you do something, put something together? And so that's how that came about.
Wow.
And it was good because we had played a lot together. So we knew each other better than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we did it as a group, our trust even got stronger.
Yes.
And it ended up, we were able to, you know, we finally got a Grammy.
Yeah.
And then we did another album, that just came out. We did it at the Blue Note in, Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Steve Gadd Band. And the only difference is that David Spinoza's in the band because Mike Landau had some prior commitments. Right. It couldn't do it. So we just remix that, and it's, you know, it's the same music but with a different thing because David is a different kind of player, so and it was nice to mix that. Mm-hmm. I did it with one of my sons, And then Rich Bream, the engineer out in LA, mastered it. But I love that. I love the mix on that thing. And it's a sort of a different vibe. You know, it's a little bit more relaxed because David plays a little bit, you know, more in the pocket. And so I'd love you to hear that too. I think
I want to.
It's simple, but I think you'd like it, man. I think you'd like it.
Absolutely. I'm a fan. Also, you should know, this morning I go to iTunes and say, iTunes, play the music of Steve Gadd. You know what it played me? Little snippets of you on drums alone. You know, like boom, king, boom, boom, king, boom, do king, boom, boom, straight at boom, stop. Next one, boom, boom, kicking, boom, do go king, boom, boom, like little snippets.
What was that? I don't know what that was. What was that on YouTube?
No, on iTunes. If I say, okay, I got, hey Siri, play Steve Gadd. Up will come these snippets of you playing, and even some Brazilian type stuff too. Boom, 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 like that kind of vibe. Chicka, 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 chicka. All these little pieces on you. I was like, wow. Do you know that?
I didn't know it was on Siri. I didn't know it was on Siri. That was something I did in Europe with a guy, and okay. It was supposed to come on, be on the computer. It was supposed to be something to do with Apple, but then it didn't work out. And I wasn't sure, you know, how it was being marketed. Yeah. You know what I mean? But the fact that you got it, I never heard anyone say they got it from Siri.
Yeah, I say, hey, Siri, play Steve Gadd. Here come these snippets. And they sound great. And you can tell you're intentionally making the snare, king, king, king.
Check it out, man. I'm going to check it out.
Okay. Okay, a couple more fast things. Steve Smith, when Journey took a thing that we were all working on that you had kind of showed us to keep the left hand on the hi-hat, chick, 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 and playing, king, do stop, boom, do ching, do got boom, boom, king, do got boom. But the hi-hat always stays at the right left hand. You're moving the right hand from cymbal to tom-tom to snare drum.
Right.
Where did you first see that at? Or did you just make that up yourself?
No, I mean, was I doing the cymbal on the offbeats?
It could be, or different patterns. It could be even different patterns.
You know, it was started with being in the studio, and you know, like I was in, you know, a drum booth or a drum room. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, the artist and the engineer or the producer would listen to some of the earlier takes or play or, you know, versions. All the musicians would be in, you know, needed to go in the control room, you know, so I would stay in the drum booth and, you know, be practicing different things, you know. And that's how that 50 ways things came about, because I started playing alternating the left hand and the left foot, playing the left foot and then playing the left hand after. I just was trying different things, and then playing 16ths on the hi-hat and playing a backbeat on the snare drum. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was just trying to keep the hi-hat going. You didn't have to really keep it going on all 16ths, because when you were playing the bell of the cymbal, that took up a note there. So the hi-hat you could let it go there, but play it right after. You know what I mean? So you felt like it was going, kept going. Yeah. I mean, it was about looking for a way to keep the groove going and add some different elements.
Yes.
You know, go from a dry hi-hat to add some cymbal to it, but not change the whole pattern. Just add something to it to make it go up a little level by adding like a different sound.
Well, Steve Smith, who's a great drummer, took the idea of what you did there and made this jam, Don't Stop Believin', doing that kind of vibe. And he had four different changes going through it throughout the song. Very inspired by what you started. I gotta give it to you, man. I gotta give it to you.
You know what? It's there for you know. No matter who said it for what, it's there for everybody.
That's right.
You know what I mean, that's what it's about. It's about, you know, putting it out there, and then there it is, man. It'll make it, and someone else will take it and take it to another level.
But
that's the beauty of it, man. You know.
Okay. Speak about Bernard Purdy. Just something that you want to say about Bernard Purdy.
Well, I love Bernard, man. You know, King Curtis and Aretha, you know, that thing live. He just was that, him and Rainey and Dupree. What a rhythm section, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And he just was an inspiration for how to play that kind of music, mm-hmm. how to play that music, not play the drums, but he played that music, you know what I mean? And it was the kind of music that I would love to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, playing with King Curtis, to be able mm-hmm. to do that with those guys were unbelievable.
That's right. That Soul Serenade is gorgeous. I'd rush home from school to hear Soul Serenade.
Soul Serenade, right.
God, it was, man.
It was just heartfelt.
Yes. Okay, now I'm gonna switch over. What about Sonny Payne, April in Paris with Count Basie Band? Any vibe there you have to say?
You know what, Sonny Payne, I heard him. I went when I was 16 years old. I was gonna go to Europe to play with this high school band mm-hmm. that I had gotten accepted to, and we had to leave from New York. My parents drove me to New York and took me to Birdland, and Count Basie was playing, and Sonny Payne was playing drums, man.
God.
And Joe Williams was singing.
Mm-hmm.
It started out soft with Basie playing the piano intro, and then all of a sudden the band came in together in unison, man. And it was like you felt like they knocked you against the back wall, man. It felt like you were in a jet like when it was taken off, man. You know, like the G4, it was unbelievable, man. And Sonny Payne was doing shit, man, throwing sticks up in the air, and the thing was grooving. It was unbelievable. I mean, I wanted to be able to do what those guys did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
All these little things that they had worked on themselves and developed, man. And every one of them had something that I just wanted to, it made everyone around them so happy. It made the music feel so good. It made the audience excited. I wanted to be able to do that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you know how it is.
Yes, I sure do, brother. But the highest feeling in the world.
Yeah, and it was, and those guys were, they had a photographer walking around there. You could have your picture taken. I have my picture taken with Count Basie. I mean, it was like incredible. It was incredible to see those people.
Yes, brother.
I learned so much from those guys.
Yes, brother.
From watching like Philly Joe or listening to Art Blakey, Max Roach, Ed Thigpen. It was just unbelievable. And they were so generous, these musicians. They were so friendly and encouraging to young people.
Yes.
And you could see them, they weren't playing big venues. It wasn't even in theaters. These were back when they were, playing clubs. You know, they would do a week at a club and then go, 100 miles further and do a week in another club like in that circuit. And they'd come back twice a year, so you'd get to meet them. Mm-hmm. I could watch Gene Krupa and just sat next to the bandstand. I could watch his bass drum and watch, I would just, it was a great way to learn, up close.
So beautiful, man. There was Frank's Drum Shop in there. We always see like Papa Jones. Just hanging out. Want to talk to you. He wants to talk to me. You want to talk to me? There he was. Papa, want to tell you about this. Tell you about that. It's like, oh, okay. You know what I mean?
It was great, man. Let me tell you, he came through. He's another one that came through with Ray Bryant and Tommy Bryant. Ray Bryant's brother was a bass player. And Papa Joe Jones had a gig with those guys. And at this club, and I was like, I sat right next to him on the, next to the bandstand, could study him, watch all those facial things that he did.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was unbelievable. And he was so animated and so happy.
Yeah.
And this guy, you know, you go back and watch some of the stuff that those guys, he could do some, you know, some brush stuff.
It's scary.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, scary. I have to ask just a few because I love you. Say something about Elvin Jones. Say something about Tony Williams. Just anything.
Well, I mean, those guys, you know, when I hear music and I try to imagine, you know, certain jazz things make me think of Elvin, you know, like a song that someone wrote, and how it's phrased, it automatically makes me think of Elvin, and I try to put myself in that head, and try to and just think of how Elvin, you know, not try to copy him, but just think Elvin, you know what I mean, and how, you know, all the things and what he does that makes you love it. And the same with Tony. I loved him. Tony, he came out, I mean, I listened to Miles. Miles had all the great rhythm sections. Out from Philly Joe with Wynton Kelly and Paul Chambers, and then Red Garland and Jimmy Cobb, Philly Joe, and then Tony took everything from and that happened before and just was a whole other thing. He rewrote the book, and it was, I mean, I loved it. It was so different and so unthought of. That, you know, I would slow the LP down to six speed 16 and just try to figure out what he played, you know what I mean? Because it was so different from what other people had done before. It was freer and broke all the rules, you know what I mean? Didn't play the hi-hat on 2 and 4, play quarter notes or not play it. But I mean, and I, what helped me understand him was seeing Chick Corea sit down behind a set of drums and how he approached it, not as a drummer, but like as a great, he knew how to play drums, but he approached it the way he played piano, that with that freeness and that, and that helped me understand Tony, what seeing Chick do that, you know what I mean? So I love those guys. I mean, those guys, to this day, you know, they took it to a certain level, and you know, and it's, I mean, when you hear music that reminds you of Train, you think of Elvin, you know what I mean? Or those kind of feels, those fast feels that Miles used to play. Tony was unbelievable.
Yeah, God. Okay, just a few more. Jack DeJohnette on the album First Light by Freddie Hubbard. Are you hip to all that?
Well, I'm hip to Jack. And I, you know, I love what he does. I don't know. I'm not sure about that particular album, but yeah, Jack's, he's another one that's just an unbelievable musician. And got his own thing happening. Got a way of playing the feel, so he can. He's got a groove and he's got a freeness about it. That's very Jack.
I have to tell you another thing that inspired me as a kid when I'm 10 was a recording of Art Blakey playing drums with Jimmy Smith called The Sermon. It's about 20 minutes long, this piece of music. And it's just a groove. Ching, 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 through 20, 21 minutes long. I mean, like only two fills, but it taught me the backbeat in jazz was magic. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Art could, he could, he had a good groove, man. Yeah, he did, man. Yeah, I do know. And
Yeah.
I do know, man. And thank God that we were inspired by that, man.
Yes.
Because some guys that came from that jazz background, it just, you know, this, that kind of simplicity just sort of, they, you know, they didn't want to deal with it. They wanted to, you know, still stretch and, you know, do what they wanted to do. But you know, in my opinion, they lost out on some other kinds of good music, man.
Yes, brother.
That I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to experience, you know.
Wow. Okay, now Eric Clapton's your bro. You spent a lot of time with Eric. And I want to remind you that Jimi Hendrix said he would go to London only if he could meet Eric Clapton. He told Chaz Chandler, I'll go to London, but I only if I can meet Eric Clapton. Isn't that cool? This guy you work with all the time inspired Hendrix so much, and Hendrix blew the world up. God, man. Speak about anything you want to say about that, because I know we're going to be short on time. But
well, you know, I just was with Eric, and we talked about Jimi Hendrix. And Eric, yeah, he loved him, man. And Eric is, I mean, this guy's been a star since he was 17. You know what I mean? Right. He's getting it on that level.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's not an accident that he's there. I mean, people that have withstood the test of time are talented, intelligent, giving, loving people. You know, and it's, you can learn a lot from being around them, and you can have the opportunity to be a part of some great music.
Yes.
And it's special to me. I cherish those moments.
Yes.
You know, and I know he can call anybody, you know, and he tries different people, and that, because he loves the variety, loves meeting new people. Yeah. But whenever he calls me back, I'm very excited, you know, to be in that company.
Yes,
it's a well run thing, man, and he treats people good. He cares about the music. He doesn't pretend to know what he doesn't know.
Right.
He'll say, "I don't know," you know. What do you think? You know what I mean? He's a good man.
Yes. Okay, Stevie, in closing, say something to the fans, people who love you, anything you might want to pass on to all of us at this time. This is a show I want everyone to watch. It's called Upbeat, and you're so special with us today. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I thanks for everyone that's listened to me over the years, and all I've done was follow, you know, do, I sort of understood what I could do, and playing drums was something that I could do. There were a lot of things I couldn't do, and I just put my energy into that and followed my heart and did it the best I could and tried to be respectful of the people that I work with. So, because it's not just how you play, it's how you interact with people.
Right.
And it's about giving. Right. It's about, you know, giving as much, whatever you got. If you have something that'll work, then you give it. You give whatever you have. And the joy is that when people receive it and it's what they needed, that's a great feeling. To be able to give and have it received, and that builds like a good friendship with people, you know. Even if you don't play with them ever again, you know, you have that give and take in that moment that you shared together, and that withstands the test of time. You know what I mean? You bump into them years later, and it's like you saw them yesterday.
Yes.
And there's a love there. And that love is important today, man, especially in the crazy times.
The love.
I just try to keep grooving and sharing those good feelings.
Okay. Well, I hope we get to see you soon.
I hope so too, man. Thank you for inviting me.
Give my love to Carol.
I will, and give my love to all the people at Tarpan now.
Yeah, man. Okay, Stevie. I can't tell you, we're just knocked out with our time with you, man. You're really, really our treasure.
Well, you're my treasure, and I hope we can talk more, man. We have to stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you again.
Always great to see that smile.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye, honey.
I am out of this world with enthusiasm and excitement for what you all just saw. The wonderful, wonderful, wonderful genius of Steve Gadd. The clarity of his playing in every situation is unparalleled. We love him so much. God bless you, Steve, for your time, your energy on this show. And anyone who's got any comments, please send them in to us for Upbeat and Modern Drummer Magazine. We want to thank everybody, Dave Fongioli, my man Billy Amendola, my man Ricardo, everybody putting it down for us. Thank you so, so much. This is Nardo Michael Walden, and a special thanks again to Steve Gadd. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for watching this week's Modern Drummer Podcast. Stay tuned for next week's episode exclusively on Podcast One. Until then, stay safe and healthy, and thanks for listening and watching.